Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Hey everyone, it's Reed. As you've probably heard, we're running ads on the Lincoln Project podcast. I want to thank you for your patience and let you know that these ads help us ensure that we can continue the Lincoln Project's mission of protecting American democracy and defeating Donald Trump in 2024. And now, on with the show. Welcome back to the Lincoln Project. I'm your host, Reed Galen. Today, I'm joined in person by my fellow co-founder of the Lincoln Project, host of LPTV's The Breakdown, author of the New York Times bestsellers Running Against the Devil and Everything Trump Touches Dies, and host of the new, almost award-winning podcast, Rick Wilson's The Enemies List. Rick, welcome back.
Thanks, Reed. Good to be with you.
Well, it's always good to see you in person.
Right. I know.
We are far too often remote. So it's been busy.
Yeah.
As it always has been. You know, I've thought about this for a long time, Rick, is that we knew that 2020 would be different than 2016, and that 24 would be different than 2020. But it's always amazing to see how those things develop. If you had told me, even 6 months ago, that you would have Joe Biden running for president again in a strong economy where inflation had come down, that you had Donald Trump now twice indicted, I wouldn't necessarily be surprised by that, but that you would also have Cornel West and Jill Stein running, that you have Robert F. Kennedy Jr. running, that you have the Russians and the Saudis and the no labels of the world all running different things to try and make American democracy more difficult to hold on to in the next 18 months. I would not have expected, maybe it's because as Stuart says, we should always never have a lack of imagination, right? But I'm surprised by the forces arrayed and how quickly they are developing.
We always tell people, you know, you can't forget the lessons of 16 and 20. You can't forget. And yet they do over and over again. Right. Jill Stein is the reason Donald Trump won the presidency in 2016 because she dragged off enough numbers in places like Wisconsin that it made it impossible for Hillary Clinton to win. Now, in 2020, at the Lincoln Project, we really addressed some of that gap and made sure that we were pushing into those voids where we needed to convince people to come across the line. And look, the bad guys learned their lesson. They understood this. They know that this is a very deeply divided country. The Electoral College calculus is very narrowly crafted. And Steve Bannon, and folks, make no mistake, RFK Jr. is a product of Steve Bannon. He is not a Democrat. He is not a moderate. He's not a liberal. He is not anything except Steve Bannon's meat puppet. He is absolutely in this race because Bannon and his people have gotten together to use him to try to use the Kennedy family name to pull some people off in the Democratic primary to weaken Biden. And I would not put it past Robert F. Kennedy to try to spoil things after when he loses the primary in spectacular fashion. He is an insane anti-vaxxer. You've got the no labels people who are now staffed by Republicans, staffed by Mitch McConnell alumni, staffed by Koch brothers alumni, staffed by people who are taking money from the billionaire class. The same people funding Ron DeSantis are funding no labels. you've got their idea is, as we've outlined many times now, to go out into these swing states, places like Arizona in particular, put a moderate Democrat, e.g. Joe Manchin, on the ballot and draw off enough from President Biden to make sure that Trump wins, because there is no path for them to win. They know what they're doing. And the cynicism of all these people is that they want to have everything in the process they can possibly get to ensure Donald Trump returns and Joe Biden doesn't. Why is that? It's because they understand that Trump is malleable, controllable, insane, vengeful. They all have their different reasons, but they'd all prefer, and believe me, the Saudis, the Russians, the Chinese, as much as the Republican Party bleats about the Chinese would vastly prefer Trump back in charge. Because under Joe Biden, we've strengthened our alliances in the Pacific. We've strengthened NATO again. We've returned to respect and honor in the world. So there are all these forces in this constellation of bad actors who are arrayed like that. But, you know, I look at it like the Axis powers in World War II. You know, Germany and Italy and Japan weren't all coordinating every single day on what they were doing. They were just all pushing towards the same set of ends. And that was power in their spheres. That's what these people are doing as well.
Someone said to me the other day that, specifically talking about No Labels, well, you know, the reasons behind what they're doing aren't really important. The motivations aren't important. And I disagree with that respectfully, Rick, because one, I think it's always important to understand your opponent's motivations. But secondly, because I think whether or not it's for No Labels or any of these other people we've mentioned, which is if they believe that Donald Trump is a better option for the United States of America than Joe Biden, we should not expect that there isn't anything they won't do to try and achieve that end.
Correct. The thing about No Labels, and folks keep saying to us, like, why aren't you focusing only on Trump? Because folks, if No Labels is in the game at the scale they're promising to be, with all this Republican billionaire money behind them, the fight against Donald Trump is an order of magnitude more difficult. The fight to keep Trump out of the White House for a second term, where he will literally kill us all, is a much more difficult equation. And no one in No Labels has any sense of regret that Donald Trump could be elected. And why? They say it over and over again. They say that Joe Biden and Donald Trump are morally equivalent. Right. They say that Joe Biden and Donald Trump are the same. And I'm sorry, if your moral compass is so deeply corrupted and skewed that you think a guy who tried to overthrow the government, constantly talks about taking revenge on his enemies, who is criminally indicted and will be criminally indicted even more so by the time we get there, who has talked about grabbing women by the you-know-whats, and who presided over the disastrous response to a disease that during his administration cost us over 500,000 lives, and in net cost us over 1 million lives, who was the most corrupt and who tried to overthrow the United States government. If you think that's the equivalent of Joe Biden, a fairly process-oriented, traditional center-left Democrat in America, then you need to either get your head examined or you are a lying liar who lies. And yet, we saw this last week. One of the founders of No Labels walked out on camera and admitted on camera, she goes, well, yeah, we did name Donald Trump as a problem solver. He solved some problems, but he didn't solve others. Okay, that's great. That's like saying, you know, Ted Bundy once cooked a delicious breakfast. He also killed a bunch of women. So let's not like lose our sights of what's going on here. In the end, Reed, there is a sense in my mind that no matter what we do at the Lincoln Project, no matter what other groups of goodwill do, No Labels is not going to leave the field willingly. They're not going to stop this chaos plan that they have. They're not going to wake up one morning. Nancy Jacobs is not going to wake up one morning and go, wow, you know, the chance of Donald Trump being president again, it's a moral evil. I can't even if it's a remote chance that would happen because of what I'm doing. She's not going to do that. The other thing, folks, you have to remember is No Labels knows what they're doing. They know that their efforts will harm Joe Biden. They know what they're doing. They get it. It's in their own polling. They've admitted it now.
Well, and they also, I mean, Rick, you ran an independent presidential bid in 2016 for Evan McMullen. Yep. I worked on Howard Schultz's effort in 2019. And the truth is, the math is very difficult. To win the presidency, you know, outright, you have to win 270 electoral votes. If there's no majority of electoral votes, it goes to the U.S. Congress. No Labels has not demonstrated in any possible way other than three or four or five different absolutely insane electoral maps that they can do that. And when pushed, they said, oh, okay, well, maybe, you know, it'll go to the U.S. House if no one gets to 270.
Where the Republicans will make the decision.
Where the Republicans will make the decision, because, guys, it's by delegation of states, not by members of Congress. But then let's talk about Robert F. Kennedy Jr., right? He doesn't have any hope of winning the Democratic nomination. If his name was Bob Smith, no one would care.
Correct.
Jill Stein and Cornel West, like, they're not going to be president and vice president of the United States. And we should remember that at that infamous dinner in Moscow with Vladimir Putin, it was Jill Stein and Mike Flynn at the table together. And so these lines, some are dotted, some are solid, start to connect in a pretty big way. You mentioned on the no labels front, it's not just the operative class, it's also the donor class, right? That is so much into this. But also, again, this idea of, in a weird way, Trump is knowable because he's completely transparent. He is a two-dimensional figure. What you 100%. See is what you get. Other people's ulterior motives are beneath the surface. His motives are at the surface. You know exactly what he's going to do. You know he's bought and paid for by somebody, and he will do whatever it is he thinks is in his best interest. And if you can convince him that what you want is in his best interest, usually financial and or legal protection or some expansion of power in his head, then he'll give it to you.
And it's important, folks, to realize the triumph of Trump over the Republican Party over time has come because so many people either chickened out or they kept thinking, oh, I'm the exception. I'm the one. I'll be okay. This won't break me. I won't be compromised. I won't be the one who was the 15th clown to be fired by this guy right. in the chief of staff job. Or I won't be the 75th lawyer. It's like women who have a boyfriend who cheats and cheats and cheats. Oh, baby, this time I love you.
Right.
I'm not going to do that again. It's all bullshit. And at the end of the day, Trump's behavior will be driven by his character. And his character is that he is absolutely determined to hold power, to become the centerpiece of American society, to make money on the side from it. And these other guys, a lot of them are driven by various things you don't necessarily see as clearly. Like, I can't tell you why Mike Pence is running for president. Actually, I can't even tell you why Ron DeSantis is running for president, because he doesn't like the work.
No.
Clearly, he's not a happy warrior. He's a kind of like snippy bitch. I don't like the guy.
So, Rick, we were talking about this constellation of candidates that we discussed that are anti-democratic in nature, that they're all around in one version or another for one reason or another to hurt Joe Biden that ultimately helps Donald Trump. But let's talk a little bit about how the rest of this operation works. And so, as we're recording this now, we're a day after a couple of very big Supreme Court decisions, one in which had to do with the idea that a vendor cannot be forced to provide a service that is against their religious code. And in the context of this case, it was a woman in Colorado who had objected to having to make a gay wedding website on behalf of a potential client. The issue is, there's no evidence that the woman was ever asked to right. actually make the website. We don't know.
No, there's actually affirmative evidence that she never was asked. There's right. affirmative evidence that it never happened. She made it up.
Right. But she didn't just appear out of the ether, Rick.
No.
Like, even if we're very hazy on the details, as we're likely to be because that's how these things are set up, take the listeners a little bit through how the right-wing money machine works.
Sure. And again, folks, I'm just going to speculate because I know how these people operate. I'm not telling you that this is how this happened in this particular case, but I know how these people operate. They find an activist in the state somewhere. And when I tell you there's a vast right-wing conspiracy, I know it for an empirical fact because I lived it. I was part of it. I was in it. I used to do this kind of shit. They look for test cases. Leonard Leo, Federalist Society, all these people. They look for test cases where they can go in and say, how can we get a case before the Supreme Court that will roll back a right or a liberty from some group we don't like? And in a broad way, they want to roll back the rights and liberties of people who are either women, brown in some shade, or gay in the current environment. They are on a long march, just like abortion. You know, a lot of our progressive friends will say, but Planned Parenthood, no, they didn't. They knew this was coming for 50 fucking years. And what did they do? They looked at the wrong set of targets. They didn't fight back against this long march through the judicial system in the country that was being undertaken in a systemic, planned, plotted way. And it doesn't matter how you feel about abortion one way or the other. It matters that there was a group of people willing to engineer the courts for their desired outcomes. It was a brilliant exercise of pure power. Brilliance can be devoted to evil and bad outcomes, but it was brilliant. But it was obvious and explicable. So what's happening with this woman in Colorado is, I promise you guys, there's some activist network we don't know or see yet of anti-LGBT folks out in Colorado who said to their friends in DC, hey, we're going to bring this case, and if we can get some money for lawyers, we'll da-da-da-da. And they shaped it, and they molded the case, and they found just the right lie to tell. And the case went through the system, and it came to the court. Now, I've had people say to me that on the law, the case was rightly decided. I don't know that. I'm not an attorney. But I will tell you one thing. I don't know in my lifetime that I've ever seen the Supreme Court rule in an explicit way with the First Amendment implications this ruling has on something that was made up and they knew it.
Right. A hypothetical.
They knew it was a hypothetical. At best, it was a hypothetical. At worst, it was a bold lie. And look, I think there are some unintended consequences to this, because if I were a progressive now, I'd consider an alternative case where they put up a sign that says, and it's not that I won't serve any Republicans, but if I find somebody who's a January 6th QAnon MAGA crazy person who wants to burn down the American government, I won't serve them. I won't bake them a cake. I won't build them a website. I won't give them service. If you want to play that game, then you're going to have to play the game with the rules that actually exist, not the ones you think should exist.
So before we get to the next example I want to talk about, Rick, I want to go back to this idea, which is, you know, the Federalist Society was started, what, 40 years ago at Yale Law School over a weekend. I think even Neil Gorsuch was maybe one of the founding members. You know, the conservative youth movement, which its latest iteration is Turning Point USA and Charlie Kirk, but, you know, it was the Leadership Institute and all these others, started at the 1964 Republican convention for Barry Goldwater. And this is not about the issue of whether or not someone should have a firearm or not. But if you go back to Antonin Scalia's very open interpretation of the Second Amendment, this all goes back to his encouraging young legal scholars to put pro-Second Amendment or to put pro-gun things in legal journals, which when these cases then came before the court, he could lean back on. So I've said this before to the listeners, it's a very well-organized, very well-financed, and relentless movement. And whereas the Republican Party is whatever it is now, there has always been a conservative movement in the country. I was a Republican, Rick. I was never a conservative. And you could be a conservative, not be a Republican. Sure. You'd be conservative Republican. Those things were all distinct from
various
one another.
Venn diagrams that overlap in various ways.
And I think I was certainly blind to all of that because I was a campaign guy. And I was a campaign guy at a certain level where, you know, I wasn't worried about state party chairman in this, and I wasn't worried about legislation in state B. Like, I was, I guess, blessed to not have to worry about that. But you're also, unless you really spend a lot of time understanding, like, the Heritage Foundation was the source of all this anti-voting stuff in 21.
Two assholes in the Heritage Foundation, Hans von Spakovsky and Christian Adams. Two assholes have written almost every anti-voting bill, every voting suppression bill in this country. They go around to the states like a pair of hobos riding the rails. They hop out. They say to the legislatures, hey, you know, those pesky black people keep voting. You want us to help you out with that? And they do.
Well, and, you know, we even, there was a, someone caught the woman who ran that particular program for Heritage a couple of years ago saying, we either take these bills directly to the legislatures, or if it's not a place where we can do it, we have what we call our sentinels in the states who then deliver basically the straw men, the cutouts that deliver this stuff. So it's a wildly well-organized operation, Rick, that I think most of us, again, just really haven't taken for granted. And then when you add on the idea that you had, whether or not it was the American Legislative Exchange Council or the other stuff, where they then matched it with outright electoral and political power at the state level, becomes very, very difficult to overcome in the states where Republicans are now in control.
And the Republicans are in very solid control in so many states that these things almost look organic. I can tell you that in the Florida legislature in particular, which I am something of a fairly knowledgeable person on, in the Florida legislature in particular, you have a sweeping number of bills that came across this time that were written by Ron DeSantis' office, not by the legislative bill drafting or by the members, but given to them by DeSantis, that were polled and focus grouped, and they said, you got to pass this bill, this bill, this bill. This is our package to win the primary for the presidency.
Right.
And it is profoundly corrupt, Reed. It is profoundly corrupt. And you're seeing that iterate out over all these Republican states. And listen, folks, I am not merciful about one-party states. One-party states are fucked up and corrupt. You want to see a corrupt legislature that is wildly corrupt? Yeah, Florida for sure. But New York is just about a close second. One-party states are a bad outcome. Where the states where there is no political diversity in the legislature, it is a bad outcome. If you think it's always going to be great for you, watch how quickly the abuse of power flips when you're not in the favored group anymore.
So, Rick, Moms for Liberty, okay, they had, as we're recording this, they are having their big confab yep. in Philadelphia at the Museum of the American Revolution, you know, which is, let me just say this. I just hope that the event planners at that museum feel good about their choices. You don't have to say yes. But Rick, you and I were having coffee this morning. Take the listeners through the sure. conversation you and I had about that.
So a few years ago, there was no Moms for Liberty. Didn't exist. And suddenly, like a lot of these right-wing contraptions, built out of nowhere, suddenly this group with a few people on the front, you know, the faces are these affluent suburban Republican mothers who all say, all I want is to be able to ban books that could have possibly offend little Johnny or little Janie's moral sensibilities.
Such as they are.
Such as they are, right? And suddenly, they're getting tranches of money from people like Betsy DeVos and a lot of other groups out of D.C., and suddenly they have all these very sophisticated consultants, and they're running these digital media campaigns, and they're running these fundraising operations that are all run out of D.C. by people who work for consultants in D.C. who work for this right-wing apparatus. And a 30-second diversion. Anytime Republicans tell you there's some massive Democratic conspiracy from top to bottom that George Soros secretly runs like a puppet master at the top, it's all fucking projection.
Right. Listen, we have spent more time around Democrats in the last 3 years, and we love them. Conspiracists, they are not.
Like, if they're so dedicated to the communist takeover of America, they suck at their jobs. Anyway, but to go back on the moms. So suddenly, they are like pushing out everywhere into school board races. And these are not people who've run campaigns before. But suddenly, mysteriously, all these consultants show up and this money floods into these races. This is a group being operated out of DC's vast right-wing conspiracy on the social conservative side. And so you see them at this big thing and all the Republicans are going there to kiss the ring. All the Republicans are going there to say, we will follow the Moms for Liberty model. And folks, let's be very real what Klanned Karenhood really is. These are people who deeply, deeply, profoundly hate gay people. This is a group that is full of raging anti-LGBT folks. And look, they're getting what they want in Florida from Ron DeSantis. The Don't Say Gay bill empowered in the end every rando Karen to go to a school library and say, I don't like that book. I don't like that book. I don't like that book. Right. I don't like that
I don't like Amanda Gorman's poem.
Right. I don't like Amanda Gorman's poem.
And I don't like Billie Jean King.
I don't like books about Anne Frank. I don't like books about Rosa Parks. I don't like books about Hank Aaron. Why? In the Rosa Parks book, why? It's because in the book they specifically banned in Florida about Rosa Parks, it was because they talked about the Klan going after black people in the South in the era Rosa Parks took a bold and courageous stand against institutionalized racism. That's why they took a book about Rosa Parks off the shelf. And all of this is a real lesson for folks who care about individual liberty. The idea that a book is going to fundamentally transform someone into being gay, I'm sorry, it doesn't work that way. The idea that a book is going to wash away the fact that there was Jim Crow and the Klan in the South is not going to make history change. It happened. And so you see that they've got this idea that if you control education, if you take political control of education, that they can achieve their idea of paradise in this world. These are people who want to reshape society in their view and their values. And these are white suburban Land Rover driving bitches who absolutely are playing parents for fools and who are going to end up harming children at a level they can't. They think there's this imaginary conspiracy where the gays are after all of their children and the gays are going to sneak into their schools and turn their kids gay. Y'all, if your kid's gay, they're going to be gay. Ain't nothing you can do about it one way or the other. Just ride the train.
You know, I think, Rick, just to bring all this together for a second, is on the Supreme Court stuff at a very high level, you know, you had the LGBT
decision, you had the student loan decision, and right. you had the affirmative action decision.
Right.
You know, take all
the voting rights decision was
and the voting rights yeah. decision, but that was one where even Coney Barrett and Kavanaugh said, right. "I can't absolutely
right.
rewrite
nuts.
The Constitution right. itself." Right?
Take the win, folks.
Right? Take the win. But what I guess I shouldn't have been shocked about or surprised about was the glee with which so many Republican leaders and presidential candidates were happy about these decisions. Now, I'm not talking about whether or not you agree that student loan debt should be repaid or it shouldn't be, or the merits of affirmative action, or whether or not you should have to make a gay wedding website.
Right.
What I am saying is that you saw a demonstrable thing where there were Americans who now are adversely affected, and the leadership of one party is absolutely ecstatic about it.
There is nothing more addictive and thrilling to the authoritarian than the raw exercise of power. They have, through hook, crook, and long effort, stacked the court in their favor, and now they're cashing in. Now they're getting what they paid for. And they love it, Reed. They are thrilled by it. And the cruelty is the point. The cruelty is the centerpiece of what's going on here in terms of the incentive structure on the right is now largely based on how your opponents politically react to you. They want to troll people. They want to
own
hurt
the
people.
Libs,
they want
right.
to own the libs. They want to cause people to suffer. They love suffering. They love delivering pain. They're sadistic at a level that American politics has rarely seen since McCarthy. And it is a profoundly unconservative approach to governance, which is, you know, let people be. They want government maximally deployed against their political and social foes, no matter how they define them. And they're going to keep doing this until they're stopped. And I put out a video on Friday, you know, not going through the cases issue by issue, but by saying to our Democratic friends a little bit of tough love, this is what happens when you fuck up elections. This is what happens when you don't pay attention to groups that say what they're going to do, deploy the resources, the money, the energy, the time, the power, the organization. While you're debating whether to call people Hispanic or Latinx, they're taking more fucking seats on the Supreme Court. So get your shit together, Democrats. Stop focusing on the bullshit and get to work on the real things that are going to cost us the entire democracy.
So speaking of people who would cost us the entire democracy, in about 6 weeks' time, Rick, Fox News will host the first Republican debate in Milwaukee. It seems like at this moment, there is a better than 50-50 chance that Donald Trump will not participate in that debate and that he will have another event. Isn't that about as illustrative of today's Republican Party at
no
a national
doubt.
Level?
No doubt.
That you're going to have 8 or 9 people on a stage arguing about something, and the only person, and when I say this, I don't mean it to be sound supportive, the only person that matters in the conversation isn't even there.
Look, Donald Trump knows one thing. He knows that the vast majority of the Republican Party is with him, that the base voters of the Republican Party, when anytime anyone attacks him, he has trained them to hate. So Ron DeSantis and Nikki Haley and Tim Scott and Mike Pence and everybody else on this list, they're going to go into that debate. The ones who get on the stage, and there won't be many on the stage, I believe. You will have a kids' table debate and a real debate. But the fact that Trump won't be there, none of them are going to exploit it. None of them are going to correctly address it. None of them are going to say, Donald Trump's afraid of me. He's a coward. He's a limp dick weakling. He won't show up to fight me.
If Christie makes the stage, he might.
He might, but I don't think he'll make the stage. And here's the other thing. They've all signed the poison pill document before this even begins. They've all signed a thing with the RNC that says, I will support the nominee no matter who it is. Well, if you're willing to sign that, you're unqualified to be president. But that debate is going to be a ghost town. And here's the other thing. I think this is really a negotiation he's having with Fox. So if Fox starts to treat him nicely, if
right.
they're nice to me again, they need me. If he starts to do that and Fox starts to give Trump the glowing coverage, well, he's going to be in a much different spot. He's
right.
going to be in a position where he wants to go and vamp around. But I keep saying that reporters are trying to make a horse race out of horse shit. And it is a very difficult scenario for me to see how this debate would change the ball game. You know, say Ron DeSantis comes in and tries to outflank Trump on the right. You like Dr. Fauci, and Trump will just like pillage the guy. He'll just body the shit out of him. None of these people are going to stand on stage with Donald Trump. I mean, folks, if you watch Ron DeSantis in any public interaction, you tell me he's going to go on stage with Donald goddamn Trump and take him out in a debate? Get out of here.
Well, they're all zombies too, right? They've all been bitten by him, and many of them willingly. DeSantis couldn't have won his primary.
Ron,
in 18.
You came to me for help. You begged me like a dog. With tears in your eyes, you begged me. What's DeSantis going to say? No.
Right. Haley worked
oh,
for him.
Please.
Right.
Yeah.
Pence. Right. Right. He tried to kill Pence and his family.
Literally tried to murder Pence and his family.
Yeah.
Chris Christie, he's going to say, Chris, I did not make you my attorney general. That's why you're so bitter. But thank you for the 5 years during my administration where you went on TV and defended me every day.
Right.
These people, I mean, there's a couple of oddballs in this race who are like running to be VP or running to be Secretary of Transportation, whatever the fuck. I don't care. But none of them are running to be president. They're all running to try to sneak in if Donald Trump has a heart attack. You cannot address Trump once and walk away. Marco and Jeb and Ted, they all like, they went on the stage like, I've got a zinger. We focus grouped and it's going to just take him out. And so Jeb would go out and make a lame joke about Trump or Ted would say something about Trump. And then Trump would just like whip his dick out and run around the stage screaming and set shit on fire and everybody would lose their minds. And the focus group zinger got lost in the mix. And then the next day, they'd be back to basically defending the fucking guy.
So, Rick, there's a columnist for the Financial Times out of London named Jemima Kelly. Uh-huh. And she wrote a column last week talking about the fundamental. And I thought this was brilliant. And I thought it was interesting that no one had really put it this way, which is Trump is funny. He puts on a show.
Uh-huh.
And if any other politician for president danced around on the stage to YMCA, like they'd be committed, right? They'd be put on an involuntary psychiatric hold. But for him, it's the thing. And I think that's the one thing that so many people don't get is it's not only that he appeals to the revanchist nature of so many of his supporters, mm-hmm. but they love him because he's nuts, because he's funny, and the rest of them are just flat out boring.
Trump understands spectacle. I say this to Democrats all the time. You need to put on a show. The January 6th Commission actually did spectacle. We had to fight with them like cats and dogs, but they finally put on a show and people need it. They need a dopamine hit. And Trump does it. He goes out there and he gives them the revenge fantasy. He gives them, oh, I know how aggrieved you are. I'm your vengeance. And he does the dances and he makes fun of people and he insults people. And it is the crudest grotesquerie you can imagine. But you know what? It's like I always say about fried chicken. I know it's bad for me, but once or twice a year, I want to eat fried chicken. These people are being fed a diet of fried chicken every goddamn day. And all these other guys are like diet Trump. You know, do you want half their tofu? They're tofu, right? He gives them the party. He gives them the show. He gives them the spectacle. And honestly, the rest of them are hoping to hack a machine that none of them can operate.
I've said this before. Even when they go Trumpy, it's like they're standing on the stage with their phone and it's right. Google Translate from English to MAGA and they speak into the phone and then they hold the phone up to the microphone. The people understand the words, but they understand it's not that person's native language. It sounds like
it's
this.
The American screaming out, donde está la museo?
Right. Donde está la biblioteca?
Right.
Yes. Talking louder and more slowly to the MAGAs doesn't make them understand you.
No.
It just makes them annoyed.
Mm-hmm. And look, the one who's trying to do it the most painfully is DeSantis. He's got this army of MAGA influencers that he's hired, and they're all trying to make him into this wild, transgressive, dangerous Ron DeSantis. And it just comes across in the most awkward fucking way, because you know what? They like show him with the Chad images and all the like badass alt-right stuff. And then you realize Johnny Ozempic here with his bad-fitting suits and his awkward personality is not the hero they're looking for. Trump with his bad-fitting suits is a clown and a spectacle and a show. And unfortunately, a lot of Americans love that. And the people that think that they're going to restore the old Republican Party are living in a fantasy world. They're living in a dream. You know what? The old Republican Party had its last stand on the January 6th committee. And Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger were the last two. That was the Alamo of the old Republican Party. And no one rallied to help them. No one came to their defense except us, the apostate ex-Republicans. But no one really understood that if you want to have two viable political parties in this country, and one is an authoritarian movement, and one is a messy democracy, you know, the authoritarian movement's going to win battle after battle after battle until you get your shit together and empower something to break it. None of these people are breaking Trump or Trumpism. They're trying to echo it or duplicate it or replicate it or hack into the machine so they can take over. But they're not going to restore individual liberty, small government, free market conservatism. Their statist, because they know the base is full of angry, as you said, revanchist, statist, little wannabe authoritarians. That's where the cruelty comes from. That's where the performance shit comes from. That's where the fight is going to be in 2024 as we face up against these people. Because again, we have to plan for the worst. The worst is Donald Trump. We also have to plan for the best. The best is Donald Trump. We've beaten him before. We know how to beat him. We can beat him again, I think. But it's never going to be easy. No one who thinks that the court case is going to take Trump out of this should be listened to seriously.
Right. This is the catch-22 that the descent of the American political system has left us with, which is Donald Trump is both probably the most beatable and the most dangerous candidate to face next year. But we should say this, Rick, is the other part of Trump's power is the gravitational pull he places on the entire political system. It's not just the Republican Party. It's everything else, too.
Right. We've said this a lot over the last couple of years. We've talked to our Democratic friends. You can beat Trump. There are plenty of ways and methods to beat Trump. We show you how. You're not going to beat him with policy. You're not going to beat him with trying to shame his people into doing the right thing. The way you do it is you fight him every day. You rattle him every day. You get in his face every day. You never stop fighting with this guy. Because if you stop, he will take territory back. The minute you stop, he will flood back in like the tide. You think of yourselves as the Dutch, everybody. You got to keep building those dams, keep pushing back the water every day. You never get to stop the fight. The Dutch reclaimed their entire country from the sea, essentially, over the last 450 years. And they did it because they keep building the structures to push back the water.
Right.
You've got to build back the structures every day. And you've got to treat the threat seriously. It will never stop coming unless you make it stop coming.
Right. Well, and look, that's what we do all day,
every day.
All right, Rick, before we go, where can folks find you online? Where can they find The Enemies List? And where can they find your books?
I am at The Rick Wilson on both Twitter, Instagram, and now Blue Sky. Also, you can find my Enemies List podcast over at Resolute Square and my weekly-ish column at Resolute Square. And my books are available where all fine books are sold, Amazon, etc.
As always, gang, you can find me on Twitter and TikTok at Reed Galen, on Instagram at Reed_Galen_LP. Rick, good to see you in person. Thanks
Absolutely,
for joining
sir.
Me. Thanks, everybody. Thanks again to everyone for listening. Be sure to follow and subscribe to The Lincoln Project on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or however you listen. Don't forget to leave a 5-star review. To connect with us, follow us on Twitter at Project Lincoln. And for more information on our movement, to join our mailing list, subscribe to our newsletter, or make a contribution to our efforts, visit lincolnproject.us. If you want to message the podcast directly, please send an email to podcast@lincolnproject.us. And if you want to personally join the fight to save our nation's democracy, visit jointheunion.us. For The Lincoln Project, I'm Reed Galen. I'll see you on the next episode.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.